greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Andrea Darlis has not heard this introduction to Eric Zorn.
That.
It's from the Fox TV series, Son of Zorn.
Which Tim Meadows is in, isn't he? I love him.
Yeah, Tim Meadows is in. It's
reminds me of Princess Bride a little bit.
I don't think it's a very good show. I watch it occasionally just because.
It's a great intro.
I was really hoping that it was going to just have one episode and then disappear because I don't want my name to be branded. The character Zorn in this show is a real doofus. So, anyway. But he's the greatest father in all the land.
I do like that, though.
According to himself. But I got a theme song out of it, so it's kind of nice.
Happy New Year. We haven't talked since the New Year because we weren't working on Monday.
Right.
I like to say this is the first Monday of 2017 that people are working, but Kevin disputes that.
Because he was probably working.
No, he wasn't even yet still. I think he just likes to be a contrarian. Mm-hmm. So welcome. Earlier today we were talking with Steve Bertrand because his son Noah went on his own at 4 in the morning on Saturday, waited in line for hours, and did get a ticket to the Obama last blast here in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I got media credentials today. And
Andre, you're going.
Yeah, I'm going too.
Mm-hmm. And I was there. I feel like I've got a collection of Obama speeches that I attended. I was there when he announced for the U.S. Senate back in 2007. I think it was like January 2007. It was really early in the process. I was there for that speech. I was there for his convention speech in 2004, mm-hmm. and then I was in Grant Park for his speech the night he won. So I feel like this is like I've got to be there to see him. To see him out.
You're an Obama mama.
Yeah, you totally are. I kind of feel that way too, because last year we did so much at the radio station with the caucuses and the primaries and the conventions and election night. So this is kind of like putting the year in a bow.
Yes.
A little bow on the top, yeah.
Although I got to say, I'm not looking forward to what I'm expecting him to say.
Talk.
I'm expecting him to give us another spin on his optimism, his we are all one nation. The whole thing that I feel, I love the optimism of it, but I think it's unrealistic.
What is he supposed to say? I'm
glad you asked that because I wrote a this is a small thing here for my Sunday column. I did a proposed have him look back on his 2004 speech in hindsight. Now this is the one, the 2004 speech is that, well, I'll the excerpts are
this
here.
This is great.
This is the one from the Democratic convention in Boston, I think. So he should say this. When I said in 2004 that, quote, there is not a liberal America and a conservative America, there's the United States of America, unquote, it turns out I was misinformed. Our nation is riven by deep and ever-deepening ideological differences, conflicting visions of what America ought to be that are fundamentally irreconcilable. When I said, quote, there's not a black America and a white America and a Latino America and Asian America, there's the United States of America, unquote, I was misleadingly aspirational. Tribalism of all sorts infects our politics and pushes us apart. I derided the pundits who like to slice and dice our country into red states and blue states, red states for Republicans and blue states for Democrats. And I said, I've got news for them. We are one people, all of us pledging allegiance to the stars and stripes of all of us defending the United States of America. But it wasn't the pundits who were doing the slicing and dicing. It was the people, and it was the politicians who knew all along what I was trying to deny back then, that polarization, demonization, and fear are strong motivators of an ever-angry electorate. And then I go on a little bit in this vein, I talk about the Republicans made great gains in state houses and in Congress by exacerbating our divisions and demonizing Obama. The Republican who will next week become our president became politically prominent by relentlessly promoting the lie that I was not born in the United States, along with scores of other lies. In 2004, I said, out of this long political darkness, a brighter day will come. In 2017, I say, I regret the error.
Now that's what he should say, but
I don't want to hear that speech.
Here's what I want to hear. I want to hear him offer a vision going forward, a realistic vision going forward for Democrats who want to do battle with, realistically do battle with what Trump and Trumpism is going to bring to us. I want him to talk about not the nation that he wishes were there, but the nation that is. What is the strategy going forward for the nation that is? And the Democrats are leaderless. They're dispirited. They're dwindling in numbers. And we all thought
the Republican Party was imploding.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's been quite a reversal. But for him to get up and say, oh, I mean, he has accomplishments. He has things that happened during his tenure, his administration, to point to. And I don't begrudge him that at all. But I think as he looks, he's going to look back some, and that's fine. But as he looks forward, I don't want to hear him talk about how we are all one people. We're all coming together. I mean, this is his brand. I know. And I know he's not going to say this, but I feel like this optimism of his, this idea that if we just sat down and reasoned together, we would all come to common sense conclusions and solutions to our problems. And that we're really all basically the same. I just don't think that that's true, and it's certainly not true anymore. And you look at how the Democrats and how Donald Trump, how the Democrats lost, and how Donald Trump won the White House, and it was not with this "we're together, we're coming together." It was like telling rural America, working class America, they hate you. They're elitist. They don't like you, and you're going to punish them. And that's why so many people, I think, voted against what's going to be in their economic interests.
It's not true, but I don't think we can handle the truth, if I may quote Jack Nicholson. We can't handle the truth.
I think you're right. I think he is going to – remember, he ran on this whole platform of hope. That was his big – I think Eric – and I hope he does this. I think he'll come back to that and kind of look ahead, because you're right, Wendy. The Democratic Party really has been knocked down a few pegs, and they really need to regroup. And I think he's going to focus on young Democrats, recruiting young Democrats, maybe getting more women, people of color involved in the process, and saying, hey, you know what? Look ahead now. This is the hand that we've been dealt as Democrats and as an America, and coming from his perspective, of course. But look ahead. You know, and I think he's going to circle back to that message of hope.
You've got to. That's all we have. Hope is my middle name now, because that's all
hope,
I have.
Hope is got. You've got to have a strategy, though. You've got to have something that when you're going forward, how are they going to fight? The Republicans are fixed to dismantle just about all of Obama's legacy that they possibly can, starting with health care. And
what's going on with that at this point? It was supposed to be, you know, Donald Trump wanted it gone. Then it's like, oh, I'm going to keep some things. We'll just repeal some of the things.
My sense is that there are enough Republican senators who have strong reservations about this idea of simply repealing Obamacare and then sort of seeing what happens, repealing it now, replacing it down the line, that they're going to hold off on a full repeal. I mean, the thing about Obamacare is that it's kind of a three-legged stool. You know, you've got this idea that people can be covered for their pre-existing conditions, right?
For the right money.
If you've got a pre-existing condition, an insurance company can't deny you. It can't jack up all the rates. And then you've got this idea of the insurance mandate. To do this, you have to require people to buy insurance, or you have to penalize them if they don't buy insurance. So you have to have everybody kind of in the system. Otherwise, insurance companies will just go broke, because people will just wait till they get, you know, leukemia or Hodgkin's or something like that, and then they'll get their insurance. So you can't do that. And the other leg is the subsidies. Have to have government subsidies, because Obamacare is for people who don't have a lot of money, so they can't pay the full premium. So there's a lot of tax programs and tax money that goes into these subsidies. So you get this sort of three-legged stool. You pull out the subsidies and the stool falls over. Or if you say that if you don't have pre-existing condition, if you don't have that right to buy insurance, then suddenly then we're back to where we were before, where you had 20 million more people without health insurance because they couldn't afford it and they couldn't get it, and it was bankrupting people and so on. I mean,
to start from scratch is almost impossible.
Well, and the thing is that the Republicans had many, many years to propose something. They've had 6 years to come up with a plan since Obamacare passed. I mean, they've been passing bills to repeal Obamacare in the House for 6 years. They have yet to agree on a plan that will work to do that for them. So there's a bunch of different ideas that are floating around out there, but they've been unable to get behind any of them, and none of them actually really solve this problem, because what this is covering up is the truth is that the Republicans for years have not considered health care to be a right. They've considered it to be sort of a privilege, good health care to be kind of a privilege, and Obamacare has changed that discussion. And Obamacare has, and people think, and Donald Trump has said, we're going to provide you with something that's better and cheaper. It's going to give you better care for less money. It's the promise that he made. I was trying to say all along, a lot of people are saying all along, you can't do it. I mean, it's a big, complicated problem that's got a lot of little moving parts in it. Obamacare was not an ideal solution. It wasn't a perfect solution. It was all that they could get done.
And some people absolutely loved it and couldn't have lived without it, and some people hated it.
And well, and a lot of the things that it does, people like. I mean, there's a small percentage of people, something like 25-30% of the public, wants Obamacare repealed. Most people want it fixed. They want the problems with it fixed somehow. Now, it's a problem to fix those, but it's going to be all on the Republicans if they just decided all of a sudden they're going to have to repeal this. They're going to have to work together with the Democrats to fix Obamacare. And then they can call it what they want. They can call it Ryan Care or Trump Care or McConnell Care, whatever they want to call it. But they have to figure out a way to fix it.
There are great parts of it. There are. There is a lot of, that does need to be fixed. But you're right. Repealing it completely would be disastrous.
Yeah, it would. And you're going to throw a lot of people either off their health care. Right. That's going to be way too expensive for them to have it. And if you repeal and then delay, insurance companies are going to come out of the marketplace and the whole thing's going to collapse anyway. So it's a big problem for them.
All right. We'll continue talking with Zorn. What is it? Zorn.
The greatest father in all the land.
I knew he'd remember that. He's Eric Zorn. You can read him at Chicago Tribune online, in the paper too, Chicago Tribune, and you can hear him right here. The Bill and Wendy Show, we're a little Bill light, but he does return tomorrow.
Is Bill not here?
720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Andrea Darlis filling in for Bill Leff. And, of course, we are visiting, as we usually do on Monday at 11:30, with Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, you have something from the Better Business Bureau that was just issued.
We've been talking about President Obama's farewell speech tomorrow. The tickets were free. They are gone. But people are now trying to sell these tickets. So the BBB warning people, there's actually a few postings that went up today that say that there have been free tickets, more tickets released for the speech. That's not true. So if you see these, beware. That's probably a scam. Don't call. If you see it on Craigslist and people are charging you money, don't do it.
Eric, you and Andrea got these via the press, so you didn't have to wait in line. If you had to wait in line on Saturday, would you have done it, either of you?
No.
Eric, I see you doing it for some reason.
Yeah, you know, I thought about it. My wife thought about it, too. She really wanted to see it. The thing is, it was so cold.
Yeah. It was
and
cold.
I didn't know that you could wait inside. If I had known you could wait inside, I might have encouraged her to go down there. But
yeah, part of the line was inside in the annex of McCormick Place, and then the others lined up. And I guess at one point, people were showing up, you know, 4, 5, 6 in the morning, and the police had said, if you got there, the tickets went on sale at 8, and they said, if you got there after 7, just go home. Because you're not going to get anything.
Really?
Don't wait in line. There's already...
How much was parking? How much did people have to pay for parking to get these tickets?
You know, they could park there or the Hyatt next door, but that's expensive. At least 20 bucks.
Street parking at that time of day, I think, may be free overnight. I don't know. Down in there on the streets?
Yeah, is there street parking near McCormick Place?
The parking meters that you have to pay. Yeah, I think those go in about 8
there,
o'clock.
The new arenas going in for DePaul basketball?
Yeah, the Wintrust Arena.
Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What else? We don't have a lot of time, Eric. We have about 4 minutes.
Well, let's talk just real briefly about what's going on in Springfield, which is that we have 2 days left in the lame duck session, and the new legislature is being sworn in on Wednesday.
We've gone a whole year without a budget.
Oh, we've gone since July of 2015.
Yeah,
that just sounds so funny. Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of chatter. Like the terrorist chatter, there's been a lot of chatter in the last couple of days that the Senate Democrats and the Senate Republicans have reached some sort of an agreement or have the rough outlines of an agreement that to get a budget put forward. And it would involve taking the income tax back up to about 5%. It's at 3.75 now.
Right,
it would involve a property tax freeze, but only for 2 years. This is what people are talking about. It would involve a new sugary drink tax, which would be on top of the Cook County.
That is ridiculous.
It's going to be like $5 for a Coke now.
Ask you, though, that would still count on a Diet Coke even though there's no sugar in it, right?
Well, it's true in Cook County, for sure. It's all sweetened drinks in Cook County. It's
like
not just
tea,
sugar.
Yeah.
So any kind of
lemonade.
Diet Snapple.
That is complete joke. I say legalize marijuana, and there you go. They're taxing our Coca-Colas.
Yeah, no, they are.
That's ridiculous.
Well, there was a tampon tax up until last week, too.
I'm menopausal now, so that doesn't affect me.
And the other thing that's on the docket is, I'm just going to talk right through that. The other thing,
I love to embarrass guys.
The other thing on the docket is it would be term limits for legislative leaders. And this is all about getting at Mike Madigan. And just this morning, while there's this talk that agreement might be coming together, maybe Madigan will get on board, I got several emails from the Illinois Republican Party doubling down on this. It's time to throw out Mike Madigan. It's time to oust him or evict him, or I forget the term.
Do you see any coup d'etat? Any scenario where he's not reelected?
Well, there's been talk that Scott Drury, the Democrat from I think Highwood, is that where he's from?
Would run for
Madigan's seat, and he would get all the Republicans and then just peel off about 9 Democrats, and he could do it. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think the Democrats know that Mike Madigan is strong, and he's their only hope to protect them against this onslaught from
Rauner. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Rauner just put $50 million into his campaign war chest. So it's going to be a really expensive, costly, long battle. And I think campaign 2018 has already started, and that's why I don't have much optimism for what's going on. But this is the smallest glimmer of hope down there right now. So,
well, keep us posted, and we'll find out by reading you online, Chicago Tribune Online. And what, Kevin? Oh.
In the newspaper.
We have a tiny bit more time.
Oh.
So I'm going to ask you, how long has Mike Madigan been in office?
He's been Speaker 31 of the last 33 years. There was a 2-year time he was not. And I don't know how long he was.
I want to say 64 was when he was first.
I don't think he's that old, is he? I think it was in the 70s, late 70s. But he's been there since the earth cooled off, basically.
He has been Speaker since. Oh, good Lord. Now I have to go to. He's the longest serving Speaker. Yeah. All right, hold on. 1971.
So he's been in office in 71. He's been Speaker, like I say, of the last 33 years.
How do you get him out, ever?
Well, the only way you get him out is if the Democratic caucus votes him out, because they have the majority, or if the Republicans take the House and they're still like, say, 9
Or if they put term limits on leadership or term limits, period, but I don't see that happening.
Well, if they enacted a term limit amendment.
You can even put 10 years on there and it would still.
How about just term limits for leadership?
I totally agree with you. I'm not a big fan of, because the thing is, we don't vote. The public has no say in leadership except, you know, very, very indirectly. We do vote for our state reps. Mike Madigan has to go before the voters every 2 years. I don't like the idea so much of term limits for state legislators, because that puts a lot more power in the lobbyists and the bureaucrats and with the governor, frankly, if your legislators are term limited. So I do like the idea of term limits.
What about a 20-year term limit?
Right. Well, that I could force. That I could see.
But the thing is that Mike Madigan is—he's 72, 73, something like that.
Yeah,
he's going to retire before any of these
things could actually be
74. He's going to retire before these changes will be put into effect anyway.
This is all about.
I think as Neil Steinberg put it this morning, that Madigan is Bruce Rauner's white whale. This is Moby Dick in action. And as you remember, things didn't turn out so well for Ahab, and they probably aren't going to turn out so well for Rauner. So.
All right, now I can say that you can read Eric Zorn online at chicagotribune.com, pick up a Chicago Tribune, or listen to us every Monday at 11:30 because he comes by. Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Great to see both of you.
See you.
Quick break, and then we'll see what Steve Bertrand has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Andrea Darlis sitting in for Bill Leff, and thank you for that, by the way.
Thank you, Wendy. This has been fun, and a buddy's coming up, I know.
Yeah, Pete McMurray, the second half, and Bill Leff will be back tomorrow at 720 WGN.